Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 13, entitled Rahugana Converses with Jadbharat, Text 17. Dair vanchito hamsakulam. Dair vanchito hamsakulam samavisan. Aruchayan silam paitivananam. Tat jatirasena sunirvritindriya. Parasparo dikshana vismitavadi. By them. The cheaters and pretenders. The so-called yogis. Swamis. Incarnations and gurus. Vanchitaha.
Being cheated.
Hansakulam,
the
association of great personalities. The association of great Paramahansas or devotees.
Samavisan, contacting.
Aruchayan,
not being satisfied with.
Shilam,
their behavior. Upaiti,
approaches.
Vanaram,
the monkeys, which are all debauchees, with no good character. Tadjatirasena,
by sense gratification,
in the association of such debauchees.
Sunirita
Indriya,
being very satisfied
with getting the opportunity of sense gratification. Tapaspara of one another. Utviksana. By seeing the faces.
Vismita.
Who has forgotten.
Avadi.
The end of life. Translation. Being cheated by them, the living entity in the forest of the material world tries to give up the association of these so-called yogis, swamis and incarnations, and comes to the association of real devotees. But due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master or advanced devotees. Therefore he gives up their company and again returns to the association of monkeys, who are simply interested in sense gratification and women. He derives satisfaction by associating with sense gratifiers and enjoying sex and intoxication. In this way he spoils his life simply by indulging in sex and intoxication. Looking into the faces of other sense gratifiers, he becomes forgetful and thus approaches death. Similarly, a foolish person becomes disgusted with bad associations and comes to the association of devotees and brahmanas and takes initiation from a spiritual master. As advised by the spiritual master, he tries to follow the regulative principles, but due to misfortune, he cannot follow the instructions of the spiritual master. He therefore gives up the company of devotees and goes to associate with simian people who are simply interested in sex and intoxication. Those who are so-called spiritualists are compared to monkeys. Outwardly, monkeys sometimes resemble sadhus because they live naked in the forest and pick fruits, but their only desire is to keep many female monkeys and enjoy sex life. Sometimes so-called spiritualists, sexting is spiritual life, comes to associate with Krishna conscious devotees, but they cannot execute the regulative principles or follow the path of spiritual life. Consequently, they leave the association of devotees and go to associate with sense gratification. With sense gratifiers who are compared to monkeys. Again, they revive their sex and intoxication, and looking at one another's faces, they are thus satisfied. In this way, they pass their lives up to the point of death. Om Jyanti Nandasya Gyananmana Salakya Shakshura Minitam Yanatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So here we are in the fifth canto, in the discussion that takes place between Maharaj Rahugan and Jad Bharat. Jad Bharat is a self-realized soul who has performed many austerities and remained aloof from worldly enjoyment, and as a result he has become very transcendental. He had no interest whatsoever in material things and was completely focused on transcendence. Therefore, Jad Bharat is the perfect person to instruct a king who is always preoccupied with material affairs, living in great opulence, and therefore the king had become covered and forgetful, because for the kings in the Vedic times, kings were allowed to keep more than one wife, and also they had some other ladies, and that was all understood. So kings, generally speaking, were quite attached to enjoying the senses and engaging in extensive sexual activities. In a sense, we can compare modern people to living like in a royal fashion. Now everyone has a nice house, a palace, everyone has a coach, right, a car with many, pulled by many horses or with a lot of horsepower. So in that way, we can see the standard of life is sort of royal in that way. And with it also, all the enjoyment is available now very very widely. And everyone has become addicted to this kind of enjoyment. And it's very difficult to take up spiritual life. Therefore, spiritual life looks like something extraordinary or something extreme, something that seems impossible. In another society, in a Vedic culture, spiritual life was so much easier because everyone in society put at least a spiritual purpose first. Whether people were married or not married, still spiritual life was the objective of society. So therefore, at this time, because we don't live in such a society, it's more difficult to be a devotee, because we're surrounded by people who are living such a different lifestyle that it feels like almost impossible what we are doing. Therefore, we need to create our own spiritual culture as a community. We need community, actually, a community of devotees who are engaging in spiritual activity. Lust is very strong in the material world, and every living being is affected by it. It says that all the living beings in the 8,400,000 species are affected by lust, and so are we. First, one needs knowledge. And we understand that such activities of material enjoyment, they are just binding us in this material world. And then life after life, we stay in the material world. And although we desire pleasure, it's not that pleasure is the only thing one is experiencing in material life. Far from it, actually. There is so much struggle also. So through knowledge, one can begin to see that this material world is not a place of happiness, it's a place, prakriti stani karsati, the struggle for existence. Gradually then we understand that there is a higher reality, a spiritual world where life is fulfilling. So at that stage, when we have such knowledge, then we can become a little bit more interested in spiritual life. Otherwise, without knowledge, it is not possible. Therefore, we see that the first thing a sadhu or a devotee is supposed to do is to distribute knowledge, is to give people more knowledge, because it is through knowledge only that we can take up spiritual life. Otherwise, not possible. Not possible. So, even we ourselves, we also need to always remain in touch with transcendental knowledge. It's otherwise, will be very difficult. Otherwise, again, the material energy takes over, and again, we'll become forgetful, and again, we'll find that spiritual life is very difficult. The nice thing about transcendental knowledge is that it's more than logic. Certainly, this knowledge is logical. It is, in a logical way, explaining how the living being who is attached to enjoying matter through the senses is naturally getting attached to trying to enjoy, but is not always experiencing enjoyment, many times being frustrated. So that kind of knowledge is one thing. But the other thing is that that actually Krishna is full of wonderful qualities, and devotional service to him is also very nice. It relates to our true nature, because our true nature is to serve. We always have to serve some way or other. We cannot avoid that. Parents serve their children. In work, we serve our boss. Service is the natural position that we cannot escape from. But it is not always. Sometimes we like to do it, sometimes we don't. But when such service is done for Krishna, it becomes very satisfying, because we are offering service to the topmost. So we're actually, for once, doing the best thing you can do. So many people do so many things. So much energy. Again, World Cup, World Cup, World Cup. People waving flags on cars, and gradually it's building up towards the finale, and the tension is building up. It's getting more and more exciting. And in that way, we stay engaged. There's something to do. But then, what is the meaning? What is the real meaning of it? It's a way of killing time. It's a way of just trying to have some enjoyment. But it's not... doesn't have a deep meaning. We're not really making serious progress in life. Life is meant for inquiring into the truth, into the absolute truth, like Atato Brahma Yigyasa. What is the goal of life? What is the goal of life? And when it comes to football, Prabhupada says that he once said, we think we are the players, but in actuality, we are the ball, because we are now in this particular position where we are. But any moment, we can be kicked. and we're out of here. So therefore, we are the ball, not the players. So looking at life, this is not just a playground, a field for a game, but we should see the aim of life must be happiness. But why am I not getting this happiness? And how can I actually attain happiness? These kind of questions are questions about the deeper meaning of life. And until one begins to ask such questions, one will just waste his time, not making real progress. Life is meant to grow, and life is meant to, as a person, develop better qualities. Then you can say, yes, I've made some progress. Otherwise, material progress, you have it for a while, and then it breaks down again. That's the nature of material life. So, we are here focusing on a discussion which aims at rising above the temporary reality and reconnecting ourselves with the eternal reality. I spoke about knowledge as a means to rise above. But knowledge in itself is not enough, but it helps. We need such knowledge. The higher platform is love, to serve Krishna out of love, to see that Krishna is the most wonderful, the most kind, the most merciful, and the most interesting personality. And therefore, we explore everything about Krishna's life and we become attracted. And then we can gradually develop love for Krishna. Krishna is very beautiful, stunningly beautiful. Krishna is very powerful. He lifts mountains and so on. Krishna is very knowledgeable. He speaks all languages. He can speak with the animals. He can speak with every living being because he's close to every living being. So gradually, as we hear about Krishna, we begin to appreciate that Krishna is actually quite amazing. He doesn't wear dull clothes, gray. No, beautiful. Yes, everything very beautiful. Why not? Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and his whole life is centered around pleasure, and his eternal world is centering around pleasure. It's not that spiritual life is only austerity. The philosopher Nietzsche makes the point that he said that it's very difficult to enjoy in this world. Right? It's very difficult. He said, but then in the name of religion, the few things that we can enjoy, those we have to give up in the name of religion. He said, what is this religion? It only makes life more miserable. There's already such limited pleasure. And then the pleasure you have, that you have to give up. What kind of religion is that? So he has no idea that on the spiritual side there is very enjoyable activity. He just sees that spiritual life means giving up. But what are we giving up? We're giving up getting drunk. We're giving up taking drugs. We're giving up all these things that cause suffering. So what are we giving up? We're giving up suffering. Nothing else. People eat the flesh of animals, and every year I was reading, every year 40 billion animals slaughtered, 6 times more than the world population every year, than the human population. 40 billion animals every year. It's an incredible number. I mean, thinking about that, shocking number. So the and people think, and why? Because it tastes good. All right, that's nice, you know. Some say that human beings also taste good, but does that mean we eat them? Yeah. By not eating the animals, we feel good. We feel good because we're merciful. We develop a quality of compassion instead of killing and being insensitive. We are developing qualities of kindness and mercy. And we can start feeling good about ourselves. So in this way, all those things that are being renounced in the name of spirituality are not at all restrictions, they are rather liberating. They're liberating us from suffering. See, when one is, it's just like I was, people are saying many times that the greatest enjoyment in the material world is sex. Well, we can also say greater than that is to be free from such desires. If you don't have the desire, it saves a lot of trouble, you know. Then you don't have to worry about Saturday night. You don't have to buy flowers. You don't have to spend a lot of money in bars and all these things. You don't have to... so many things you don't have to do then. If you don't have sex desire. You don't have to spend a fortune on all kinds of clothes and things like that. Think about it. Just the consequences of sex desire are quite... far-reaching, you know. So they may. The other day I was writing about this, and I was saying, comparing it to being addicted to cigarettes, to smoking. Say, we are smoking. You have on airports now are all smoke. Free zones, and then you have this glass box, and people are in the glass box, and smoking in the glass box, and it looks kind of, what shall I say, it looks kind of foolish, right? These people in the glass box, everyone's looking at them, oh, it's just a handful of them, it's a small glass box, oh, those are the smokers, right? It's like, and everyone can see, you know, oh, just look, you know, and they just sit in there as if it's trying to feel at ease, but meanwhile it's embarrassing to go sit in a glass box and smoke, obviously. So, but if you would ask the people, if you would ask the people that come out of the box and say, do you like smoking? They would say, oh yes, very much. Yeah, very much. Yes. Yes, I like it very much. But then, if there's someone who is not a smoker, when they see all that and hear all that, they will say, this is foolish, you know. You're liking it very much. You know, you're liking it very much because you are addicted. Yeah. Yeah. So the same we can apply to sex also. We are addicted. We're just addicted. When we take up serving Krishna, then gradually our interest changes from enjoying the body to enjoying serving instead of taking. Enjoying the body means taking for our senses. And instead of taking for our senses, we are now becoming very active in satisfying the senses of Krishna. Like Prabhupada wrote a letter where he explains, he says to Kirtanananda, he said, if you you please worship the deity and you decorate the deity very beautiful. And when you make the deity very beautiful, then you will forget everything about the beauty of the material world. Because the beauty of the material world, yeah, it cannot satisfy the heart. So we are not proposing a life of giving up. We're not proposing a life of giving up mundane pleasure. That's not our focus. We're proposing a life of embracing spiritual pleasure. A life of, you can't do both at the same time. So I say, okay, we give up the material, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to accept the higher, the spiritual. And serving Krishna. Yes. So, at this point, we can only hear about Krishna. We hear how Krishna lives in Vrindavan, the spiritual world. We hear that there the land is made of touchstone. We hear that there the trees are desire trees. We hear that there are cows, Surabhi cows, that give unlimited quantities of milk. We hear that everyone has a spiritual body and that these spiritual bodies are fully blissful at all times, never uncomfortable. We don't see in the spiritual world groups of people stretching, no, because of the spine, not required. There is, the spiritual body is completely ecstatic. It's not like, I have a cushion under a certain part of the body so that I'm propped up, you know, so that I can sit a little better because it gets a little difficult. Now I'm thinking about it, I may as well stretch this leg since... So that's the nature of the material body. But when we ask, are you okay? Oh yes, 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 I'm fine, yes, yes. Are you happy? Oh yes, I'm very happy. Are you completely happy? Yeah, completely. Not completely, actually, to be honest. Because, in my case, because in 1987 I flew out of a car and I landed on the part that you use for sitting. And ever since that time, sitting hasn't been the same. What can I say? Sitting has never been like it was before. It's okay, I'm sitting. But it's something about sitting. I got used to it. So when anybody asks me, are you happy? I say, yeah, completely. Yeah, fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. But thinking about it, there is a part of me that's actually not completely comfortable. So that's the material experience. Now, a spiritual body is completely blissful in all respects. Everything is completely ecstatic. We cannot imagine it right now. We can only try to imagine it. We try to think about such a body. How is it possible? What would it be like? And we imagine it. But we are incapable of imagining it, because we are seeing everything through, so we just think, Like Prabhupada gives the Dr. Frog example, the frog in the well who is living in his well and who hears about the ocean and who says, like, what's the ocean like? Is it like this well? Oh no, it's much bigger, bigger than this well. 10 times bigger, 100 times bigger, 1,000 times bigger than this well. So we tend to think like that when we think about the spiritual world. 10 times better, 100 times better, 1,000,000 times better. It's 1,000,000 times better than life on this planet. No, it's not 1,000,000 times better. It's unlimitedly better. It's completely the opposite. But that's where we belong. Because isn't it our nature that we desire perfection? Everyone always desires perfection. Yeah. It's like, that's the thing about this world, is that it's not perfect and you have to settle for less than what you really wanted. You have to buy some clothes and you have to settle for something. You can't really get what you wanted. You have to buy something, whatever is there. That's material life. To settle for less than the ideal. Some people want to get married and in the end, well, they just settle for someone. Right? It's not that you take the ideal, the dream person. It's not like that. No. It's like, well, I guess I'll settle for this one. As my father used to sometimes say to me, son. You hate it when fathers start with son. Son, life is a compromise. And I would say to him, maybe for you it is, but not for me. But in the material sense, he was right. You can't get around it. In the material sense, we have to settle for whatever we get. It's not exactly what we dream of. We're in one situation, and then after some time, the mind, somehow or other, is not fully satisfied. And then we move to another situation. Then we come to the other situation, and then the mind, again, is thinking that, I don't know if I can stay here. I don't know. I think maybe I need to change the situation again, and again, and again, and again, and again. And this is material life. The grass is always greener on the other side. The proverb goes. Why do we have a proverb like that anyway? Because it's like that. You go in the park and you look for a place to sit. And you come and say, the grass is not so green here actually. Looks better there. Then you go there. It's also not so nice here. No, but it looks good there. Everything looks good at a distance. So material life is like that. There is no rest. That is why sometimes they say, shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace. Like, why are they talking about peace, peace, peace? Peace, brother, peace. No, they're talking about peace because you're never at ease in any material situation, no matter where. You're looking and it's just not ideal. So we have to change. Materially, we have to come to that point and say, okay, I just take it as it is, make the best of it, and just tolerate, because, what can you do? It will never be perfect anyway. But perfection is there in serving the perfect person. And trying to offer Krishna something, offer him the best. And the more we get into that, offering Krishna the best, the more Krishna begins to manifest himself to us. And the more that spiritual life becomes magic, and the more spiritual life becomes inspired. And that is what we really need to do. In my In my travels, I visited a devotee's house, and he had quite an amazing altar, because on his altar he had deities of Radha Krishna, which were from Vrindavan, 250 years old, and they were quite, you could see that, you know, they were, in those days they used to, there's a lot of detail in the deities, very beautiful, and they were very ecstatic, you know, they were like in sort of some dancing pose, so I think, oh, nice. Yeah, but that was not everything. That was not everything at all. This devotee, he had gone to India and he had done some service in some of the places where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had performed his pastimes. And in some families in India, they still have some things that were used by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. And he helped the family to clean these things and to make arrangements to preserve them better. And as a result, they gave him little pieces, a piece of the chadar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a piece of a kopin of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and a little chip of the shoes from Lord Chaitanya, which are in the temple in Dameshwar, in Navadvip. It is a temple, and we know that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, he left his shoes for Vishnupriya, for his wife, and she worshipped those shoes, and those shoes are there. And the shoes, they're made of wood, and they're in a silver encasing. And then, in order to preserve the shoes, they took him out of the silver casing, and then there were like a few tiny little pieces of that wood. He got some of those. So he has all kinds of things like that, paraphernalia that were directly used by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a piece of a turban of Nityananda, directly, Nityananda's turban. In Jaipur they have that jacket of Madhu Pandit made of Tulasi beads, it's very famous. He has a little piece of it. This devotee has some shakti to collect all these things. So, what an amazing amount of mercy there on his altar. In such a way, we're coming closer to Krishna. In such a way, when we are eager to collect mercy. When we are eager, everyone has some ability, you know, some shakti, something they can do. Some people distribute books. Some may say, what will my 7 books do? But it's not 7 books, because we go out every day. And because the books are distributed through a personal contact, right? Then a person gets touched by that book. So that is meaningful. So this spiritual life, in the beginning we get a little taste, and then when we build it up more and more with service, then Krishna, who is otherwise invisible to us, becomes more visible. You know? If you make such an altar and you have so many holy places, Krishna becomes more manifest. So this is our business, to somehow or other make arrangements through service, by serving Krishna, to make him more manifest in our life. And then everything becomes meaningful. Otherwise, it's difficult, you know. Otherwise, people look at us, look at them, you know. They give up everything. And then we ourselves feel, look at ourselves. We're giving up everything. then all the focus is about giving up. Then it's very difficult. How can we give up everything for long? But if we actually are getting absorbed in serving Krishna, and we discover more and more about Krishna, then everything gets quite amazing. Also, on this altar, this devotee had a deity of Lord Jagannath, just Jagannath. And, you know, in Jagannath Puri, they worship Lord Jagannath in quite a special way, very elaborately. And Lord Jagannath is made of wood, and in India there are termites, right? You know, they eat the wood. And so wood is such a thing, right, that anything of wood is difficult to keep over the years. It just gets destroyed. Yeah? And so therefore deities of wood are more temporary than deities of stone, obviously. So therefore there is a practice that approximately every 19 years they carve a new deity of Jagannath, and they replace the old deity, and then the old deity is put to rest with a ceremony in the ground. Mm. And what they do is, like, inside Lord Jagannath, they have in the region of the heart, somewhere in the trunk, in the abdomen somewhere, there is a space, a hole, and in there is what they call the Brahma Pinda. The Brahma Pinda is a stone. It is actually a Shalagram Shila, which is inside the deity. Yeah? Inside the deity. And then, when they are recarving the deity, then they take out the Brahma Pinda from the old deity, put him in the new deity. So, then this devotee had this Brahma Pinda, and had this Jagannath, and inside there is a Govardhan Shila. So it was quite an altar, I must say. Not just, you know, quickly put some pictures down, and, you know, Krishna is here and everything fine, and, you know, and offer something. No, everything was quite filled with special mercy and special arrangements. And that kind of effort is what makes the difference. When we do that, then we live with Krishna. So the devotee, it is said in the Upadesamrita, or Nectar of Instruction, must always live in Vrindavan by hearing, chanting, remembering, constantly engaged in this way. And that way we are entering deeper into the spiritual realm until that becomes our reality. Only then can we be peaceful in devotional service, when we live in the spiritual world. As long as we live in the material world and are practicing spiritual life, it will be a struggle. But when we start to live in the spiritual world, try to serve Krishna nicely there. Like the altar is the spiritual world. So when we serve on the altar, we're serving in the spiritual world. The Bhagavatam is Krishna. When we're reading the Bhagavatam, we're in the spiritual world. The name is none different from Krishna. When we chant the name, we are with Krishna. So all these things are giving us access to the spiritual world. Sri Vrindavan Dham is the spiritual world. So the essence is, we must somehow or other live in the spiritual world. And then this Krishna consciousness will be blissful. And then our renunciation, our so-called renunciation, will be no renunciation at all. It's simply a means of staying free from material entanglement, so that the material energy doesn't take too much of our time. You know, I mean, you know, family life has its pleasure. It does. You know, husband and wife, exchanging affection, lovely children, you know, there's pleasure, you know. But also entanglement. Also entanglement. So sometimes devotees, just for the sake of saying, to keep time and energy free for absorbing in Krishna and serving Krishna and living in his spiritual realm. Therefore, they say, no, not for me, this family life. Because others, they say, okay, we'll have family life, but we'll bring Krishna into the family life as much as possible. And that also works. But of course, still, some energy has to go in money and all these things. And the main thing is to make that change where we become residents of the spiritual world by serving Krishna, by hearing about Krishna, always and always making arrangements for Krishna, again and again. That is what is needed. Okay, questions? Comment?
You mentioned that most people believe pleasurable thing is like from the sex life is the topmost, let's say. And then to be free of the sex desire, maybe we don't need to think about Saturday night, and then we don't need to buy flour, spend so much time, money to buy clothes, okay. And then we may see such people then, buying clothes, planning nicely on Saturday, buying flour, and then we may
think,
oh, these people are thinking of sex attached to such things, so they are doing. But maybe it could be these people are still free from sex desire, but still doing it.
Possible. Although it's not easy on a Saturday night.
Well, so what would be the real symptom that I can see and I can understand clearly, discriminate from the speech or behavior of the person who really not influenced by sex desire? And is called such a person?
Okay. Sex desire is very powerful. And it says that every living being in the whole universe is affected from. So who on planet Earth can say he's not affected? To see someone who's free from sex desire, such a person must be filled with love. Only such a person who is really, really filled with love, yes, like Prabhupada, you know, is beaming love, then you can see. Others may not be completely free from sex desire, but it's a big step if we are shifting our faith, you know, where we say, okay, I don't just have put all my faith there. And like, you know, I'm not speaking against sex. It has a part in life, right? But in our modern society, we make too much of it. It's been put too much in the center of life. See, it's become like such a big thing. Like you have, you have Freudian philosophy, you know, like, I mean, if you oppress, then get world wars and so on. Research these things sometimes, and I was looking on the internet, and there was a list given, you know, and the list was as the result of some research of an academic, and he was saying that a list of people who never people who don't think of sex every day, people who are not regularly, who are celibate, or people who are not in. It was all, I mean, forgot now. A whole list of things like that, people who are not involved with sex, right? And then at the end of the list it said, you may be thinking that I'm speaking of some church fathers here, you know, and so on. It said, but actually they were speaking about dangerous criminals who had been involved, you know, the statistics of dangerous criminals who had, like, okay. I don't know, you know, this kind of psychology research is a little slanted. It's a little slanted. It's part of the world, you know, like the first temple here in Amsterdam that I got involved in was on the Herengracht in, you know, not so far away. And my service was, there were many, many devotees in the temple. We had like over 100 devotees staying in the temple. And there were many, the brahmacharis would all go on sankirtan. So it was my service to take the laundry to the laundromat around the corner. So I had this huge bundle, and so that all you would see is some legs walking to the laundromat, right? And then I dropped it off there. So when I came in, I didn't see anything, only I saw my feet and the street, you know, and dropped it off. But then when I came out of that, then out of the laundromat and on the other side, there was the NVSH, which is the Dutch Society for Sexual Reform. So it's Dutch, and it's sort of, you know. And they had everything, right? Why not with children? You know, why? Sure, you're not gay. Are you sure? If you are, ring this number. You know what I mean? And so on. Everything, you know. I mean, if you're attracted to children, ring this number. There were no websites, so it was all numbers, you know. And it's like every day I walk past there, just look at it like, you know, Hare Krishna. Trying to kind of not let it agitate my mind. So this is what we have. We have a culture where we say, okay, you know, sex, yes, 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 and you read about it in the magazines, you know, and newspapers are full of pictures, and so on. So what about it? But I also tell you, I mean, I didn't live a life like a Boy Scout, right? And when finally, you know, and when I was young, my mind was thinking about these things, and then finally I had my first girlfriend, and okay, and there it happened, the amazing thing, and it wasn't as amazing as I had actually thought, and I walked on the street, and a tune came into my mind. Is that all there is? Is that all there is? The whole world makes such a big thing about this, and is it that big? Not as big as they make it. So it has a place in life, but not number one. It's a physical, it's something, part of the body, and desires come up, and people desire to satisfy them, fine. But you cannot put it in the foreground. There are greater things to do with one's life. To develop great qualities, to become selfless, to become merciful, to become kind. So this is what we are looking for. So if you're looking for, I don't know if you'll find someone who's free from sex, but to a degree free from lust, right? Then, you know, then you must find someone who is not selfish, who is really working for the welfare of others. That's something. Still, that doesn't mean that sex desire is gone. It takes a lot more. Only deep love for Krishna can free one from sex desire. That takes a lot of devotional service. Therefore, you cannot expect to find such a person on Saturday night or any night or anywhere in town or in the countryside. You should not expect. But we don't put our faith there. We don't. You know, you put your faith where you think there's happiness. You don't think there's that this is gonna make me happy. Yeah. Need something deeper for happiness. So we put our faith in devotional service. Yeah. And obviously we get some happiness because we are celibate and we are not getting aggressive. So it seems to work, right? It seems to do something, this devotional service, because we're not, you know, you don't see scratch marks on the wall, you know, of people who can't handle it any longer. Doesn't mean that devotees are free from sex desire, but at least it's not excessive in most cases. And gradually it diminishes. The energy shifts towards Krishna. So that's more realistic to look for that. Yeah, thank you very much. Have a nice day. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Otherwise?
I was just wondering, is it this Shila of Govardhan into Jagannath?
Yeah.
Is it really not Rasavas or I don't know?
Well, it's part of the system of no, the worship that's there in Puri is ancient and traditional, and of course it's not needed in a way. It's not needed, but it's also not inauspicious. The deity without is still, Krishna is still manifesting through the deity. It's not that we're sort of thinking without such worship, there is no presence of Krishna in the deity. No, Krishna manifests himself through any deity form. But to bring in the Shiva, yes. Why not? Thank you, stop. Thank you. See you again. Shiva Prabhupada. Kijaya.
That's it.